Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Science Studio program. This is Keith Pannell, and today we're going to be talking for a very interesting lady. She is a geologist by training, but she's got into all sorts of things like material science, teaching, consulting. She flies an airplane.
Aerospace.
And so now I better tell you who she is, because her name is Ruth Barrett. And Ruth, welcome to Science Studio.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here today.
Well, I'm glad you're here, too, because there are lots of stories to be talking about. We'll start out at the beginning, as we always do in these programs. How did you get to be interested in science? What were those stimulations that put you into that direction?
I think in general, as a child, I found life just interesting in general. I remember being a small child. My sister was born when I was in the third grade, and really I was so interested in what this baby was about, too, and helping to raise her and learning how to do that even. And even other things like how to make invisible ink and then have it appear again, little experiments like that I would start out with.
So this was encouraged by your parents, then?
I would read things in books sometimes. I would find some interesting things and then, you know, expand on them a little bit. By the time I was in the fifth grade, I had a very good teacher who really taught us a lot about every subject. And she took us to the Museum of Science in Boston. And we got to run around that place for the whole day and just discover anything we wanted to know anything about. And I was hooked on science by then. And my dad was an engineer. He was an electrical engineer. And he was always science-oriented. I grew up in an area in southern New Hampshire, which was very technological. A lot of the people were very good in math there. And I just thought science was it, you know, really, at that time. But I was also good in art. My mother wanted me to keep going with the art I was doing. And by the time I got into high school, I took a lot of art courses. But I never forgot the science. I always took the college prep science courses. We didn't have a physics teacher, but a chemistry teacher taught it. So I went for what I could get. And you have to take opportunities wherever you can find them. And that's really the key, I think, to being successful.
You mean not to sort of focus on one thing and sort of go hell for leather for it, but when little side avenues of opportunity open up, go down.
I think for a woman, that is a very good way to approach life. Now, a lot of men think, well, you need to be very narrow and get really good at one topic. There's nothing wrong with focusing on a topic. But a woman has to spread out. If she's called on to do something, she must be able to go in that direction and be capable at that point.
Let me interject. Why is that so important for a woman as opposed to a generality for men and women?
Well, it's very important because in general, being in the sciences or engineering, women, they have to be better than the men. They actually have to work harder. So you have to be good at it. And that is the reason.
A lot of substandard men out there doing science?
Well, there are more of them, so you get a bigger curve.
That's interesting. So, I mean, that's an argument that I hear a lot, right? Mm-hmm. That in fact, the women have to exceed their capacities compared to men. I've not totally understood that was always true from my own personal experience, but I'm quite prepared to take that as a particular position.
Yes,
and investigate it each time I have the opportunity.
A woman has to be a high achiever. Plenty of underachievers out there. I can even say I'm one of them. I should really have probably even done more in my life so far. But you do what you can while you can do it. And if you take those opportunities, you will never feel that you're unsuccessful.
So let's go then. When you had the opportunity to study geology, you know, you did it.
Well, we didn't have geology when I was in high school. We did not have it. As a matter of fact, I started out as an art major because my mother wanted me to be an artist. She thought I was good enough. Well, I don't know about that. However, I did. I took a year of art, and I determined that I wasn't really learning very much. I could learn far more material they weren't teaching me the techniques like I expected. I would do the projects. I was very creative enough, and scientists definitely have to be creative to some extent. I would think most are.
I would hope so.
I would hope so. That's true. So middle of my sophomore year, I decided to change my major, which I did. And I had to cram in those courses to finish in 4 years.
I worked. Where did you go to school?
Worked in the summers, too. I went to the University of New Hampshire College of Technology.
Okay.
So we were required to take the engineering weed-out courses. Had to have them. Computer science.
It didn't do you any
all
harm.
All that calculus
right.
and differential equations and statistics.
So, but in the end, you landed up with degrees in geology and a master's degree in geology, right?
A bachelor of science degree in geology.
Right. And then a master's also, I think.
I went to the University of Idaho for my master's degree, College of Mines and Earth Resources.
What did you sort of pick up in geology that you thought, hey, there's a career for me? This is where I think I can make an impact. Which particular branch of geology?
Well, in the beginning, I started out doing mineral reconnaissance work. I worked on that NURI program. That was a uranium resource for the U.S. government. It was indirect, though. I was hired by a small company to do that. And then later I got into gold exploration. Boy, that seemed quite exciting to me. And I pursued that a little while. And
well, certainly as gold went from $30 an ounce to 1,700.
Gold price was pretty high around 1980 to 81. Then it dropped, and I went back to school at that point. And I went for economic geology.
Now, economic geology means you're looking for geologic resources that can be relatively easy mined or obtained and then...
And that have value, the economic
yes.
geology,
right.
yes. Now, precious metals is one part of that, gold and silver, or there are a few others.
Oil and gas would be another pair, right?
Well, possibly you could put that in a different category, but the schools I went to didn't teach any courses in petroleum geology, as a matter of fact. We had other types of courses. Geology is an extremely broad field, and you can get into many, many things. Even though you have a degree in geology, you can reach out. I went into aerospace. I've done material science.
That's a big jump, right, from geology and all of a sudden aerospace.
Well, you can vary what you do.
Well, come on, tell us. How?
Everything can apply. If you have that lab experience, it can be applied to more than one field, really. And you can, you know, if you can do analytical work, a geologist can work in material science, aerospace, it definitely applies there.
All right.
There's plenty of geology on the planets and the moon.
Once you get there, right. Well, tell us, what did you do in the aerospace industry, so to speak?
Well, right out of graduate school, I got a job, and that's, the business was very poor at that time for exploration in geology. So I took that job that I did get. I applied to probably 150 places, and that was the only job that I got. I had a 90% response rate for my applications.
Well, at least that's positive.
Almost
nowadays,
unheard of.
Yes, exactly.
However, I took the job that was offered to me, and it happened to be in a nice national laboratory, the Johnson Space Center. And I got right into doing electron microscopy and analyzing materials that had been in space or come from space. I studied meteorites, a little bit on lunar rocks, orbital debris and cosmic dust.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Believe.
Right.
It wasn't quite what I was interested in doing at the time, but a job's a job, and it really doesn't matter if your career is a standard career. As long as you're working, you are doing something.
And enjoying it
and
learning
it.
Interesting things. I mean, it seems to me that is a career, the one you've just described at NASA, of great interest.
Yes,
it is. Why didn't you stay in that?
Well, they had some money problems and they, you know, things happen. You cannot count on your jobs lasting forever. You may work a decade at a job and then go on to another something else.
I mean, and that perhaps is a lesson that we're not quite ready to learn yet. Maybe the younger generation is. I mean, but people like me thought, well, I get a job, I'll do this for 20 years. Maybe I'll change when middle age for something else, but that's going to be it. Nowadays, I think young people graduating from college have got to be prepared for multiple careers.
Oh, yes, you do. And you have to be very flexible and be ready for change and to make the transitions when they come. One of the hardest transitions I ever had was going right from graduate school into that job in aerospace. Wasn't exactly along my thesis line lines by any means, but it was a difficult transition there for that change.
And can I ask you if you wanted to have a family? Do you have children?
I do not. As a matter of fact, I think it's very important that a woman establishes her career before even being committed to another person and even having the children. Any woman can have children. There's no reason she can't have her life the way she wants it. A lot of people in the past used to think that, you know, having a family didn't go along with being a scientist, but of course it does. You can have a private life. You can do anything else you want. And I got into a lot of other activities. Where I worked at the Space Center, there just weren't men my age at that point. There were older ones, 45 and divorced, and they wanted me. And there were 22-year-olds, but I was sort of in between. And
So I pursued my activities
like flying right. And teaching. I learned how to teach scuba diving. I did that for a while.
So an incredibly varied career, as a matter of fact. Right. And so
yes.
I know one of the things that you're particularly passionate about is your advocacy for women in science. Why is it important to get more female scientists? What is it that they can bring to the table that we don't already have?
It's very important to have more women in science. Women can contribute a lot. Women are also very creative, too, and that applies to the sciences and engineering. I don't want to leave out any engineers either. That's a big field in itself, and they overlap. And the women, if they have an interest in science and want to pursue it, they really should. They shouldn't divert away from that just because it's been a traditional thing to do. I don't believe in that. If a woman wants to learn science and certain aspects of it, doesn't matter what field it is, she should pursue that and get as much education as she can at that time.
You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell, and our guest today is Ruth Barrett. She's a consulting geologist, engineer, pilot, and we're talking about at this particular moment the role of women in science, and we're going to come back to that. We'll be back in one moment. Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Ruth Barrett. And Ruth and I were talking about the importance of women being ready to take opportunities no matter where they come. Once you've got a basic education is, I think, your basic line. Go out there, get the best education you can, and then look for niches. Now, let's go back to what we were talking about before the break. And your point about women needing to get into science or any opportunity. Is there anything special about women in science compared to women in industry or women in scuba diving or whatever? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to tease out, how does science benefit apart from just getting more people interested in the game?
Well, women can do a lot, and I think that they can really be as accomplished as the men. This is proven.
I agree.
This is proven in the flying business, as a matter of fact. Women pilots are just as good as the men, maybe better.
Let's stop right there. Why are they likely to be better? Or is that just statistically there are going to be some women better than some men, et cetera?
Well,
I'm trying to see if there's any real something to hang my hat on, a peg, to say when I write to NSF or NIH, you know, we're missing out more than just women, but women bring to the table this extra faculty.
I think that women that go for these things are really good in general. So there are even less women in something like flying, too. But they're hard workers, ones that will do those sorts of things. And some of them may have families too, but they make the time to put in the extra work. And women in general do have to work a little harder than the men.
Well, I can certainly see that in
some – to make the progress.
For example, in the game that I'm in, I'm a faculty member, run a research group, et cetera. And, you know, I've had children. My wife's had children. But the thing is, I didn't look after the children. I mean, I stated it unambiguously, you know. I was a father that was away from home a lot.
Oh, it worked.
And I was doing my career. For ladies, that's much more difficult.
It is much more
and
difficult.
The academic environment isn't aimed towards facilitating those women in faculty positions be both family raiser or child raiser.
It can be, though.
Well, tell us where
it
you see.
It can be very much so. Any type of research position in a national lab or teaching in a university is very conducive, really, to having a family, a high school teacher even. Whatever a woman wants to do, she can do that. When they're teaching in school, that's during the day when most of the children are in school. If the children are very young,
I understand,
you can always get a babysitter.
That, right. I think about when I started my career. I mean, I was in the lab and in the department for inordinate long hours, let's say 15 hours a day, right? Well, you know, if you're a mother with children, you can't do that.
You have to be able to balance your time. And women are very good at balancing things. As a matter of fact, they're very good at multitasking. Even my husband says, well, women are better at multitasking.
Oh.
And they are. And they have all the same skills that men do. They're learning computers. They may be very numerical if they're in science. They can manage information. They're critical thinkers, problem solvers. I've had to be definitely a problem solver through my life. They have these skills, and if they can contribute, they do what they can. And there's no reason women can't have a family and do it too. Women are good at it.
I just think it's much more difficult, and I don't think the universities, for example, make it any easier. Because the standards are the same. We expect 15-hour days. Well, I don't see how a mother with young children can spend 15 hours a day in a university laboratory or environment. I mean, I just don't. I think there should be different expectations, different rules, and different opportunities.
Things are a little different now. With computers, you can take it home. Sometimes you can do a little bit more work at home.
Well, that's true.
Still be with your
family. Can't take my
lab
at home. I can hardly keep my lab at a university because everyone's worried about dangerous chemicals, right, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm not a proponent necessarily of bringing work home, but if you're a mother and you have to do it, you do what you have to do.
Okay. Tell us about the geology that you're interested in right now, this economic geology. Where do you see as an interesting opportunity these days for economic geologists? What are the things we should be looking for?
Well, these days it's extremely difficult. This is the worst the business has seen lately. There isn't any money right now for real precious metal exploration. But there are other fields that you can get into. Industrial minerals is one of them.
Well, one of the things I know that there's a great demand for what we call rare earths. Lanthanides, you know, these particular metals are being utilized for all sorts of screens, et cetera, et cetera. And a large resource is in China, which has been a somewhat suspect source. They can open and close the door, so to speak. Are there regions of the world where outside of China where you think if we had better techniques, lanthanides would be – I'm choosing lanthanides because I like them. Any opportunities there?
Well, possibly so. I have actually worked a little bit in rare earth elements in Texas, where we are now. But you're right. China does have control over that. But it may be picking up also.
Well, whereabouts in West Texas?
Oh, we worked around the Van Horn region. And
well, it's just down the road.
Alpine, yeah. Those areas. They're out in West Texas a little bit.
And let's go to something else you said, because you've had some really interesting experiences, Ruth. I mean, I'm impressed with the breadth of what you've been doing. And you mentioned about scuba diving, but you also mentioned your interest in flying And tell us about some of the things that you did when you were flying. What are some of the interesting activities that you did as a pilot?
Well, mostly I had a lot of fun.
That's good.
I was, as a member of the 99s, we used to fly to places and just to eat in a restaurant even, just to get together with them. We had meetings. We gave presentations to people. I helped teach cadets in the Civil Air Patrol. I was at Ellington Field down in the Houston area. I've worked on special projects with them, too.
So that's in the 99ers. And,
yes.
Remind me why it's the – my wife's a member, but I should know why 99. What's the number mean?
The 99s was the original name that Amelia Earhart gave the organization years ago when she started it. She was the progenitor of the 99s, and there's a whole story about her, and you can read about it. But anyway, that was the origin.
But why 99? Is there some special?
I think there were 99 members in the in the beginning. So that's what they called it. They counted them up. And
oh God, you'd think they'd rush out there looking for the number 100, right?
That's the case.
So what other experiences have you had?
Well, I was a captain, a mission pilot in the Civil Air Patrol. We did some counter-narcotics missions, but we also searched for ELTs, and not just from the air.
Sorry, what's an ELT?
Emergency locator transmitter, and they're on boats, too. And we had to search for one on a boat using DF. I was into ham radio. I'm also a ham radio operator. I have an extra class license. Some of that applied for DFing this ELT, and we had to do it along a channel down in the Houston area one time, and we found it. We found it on a boat. It was very early one morning. We brought a couple cadets with us so they could learn, too.
So tell me, what is the Civil Air Patrol?
Well, it's an auxiliary of the Air Force. It's a civilian organization. Of course, they don't treat you like you're quite in the Air Force, but you wear that Air Force uniform. And I was a member at one time from about 89 to 2001, but I'm still a member of the 99s.
Well, but you said you did anti-narcotics. What did that mean? You were flying up and down the border and looking for suspicious?
Yes, we were flying the border looking for people trying to cross the border and trying to determine how much of that was going on. There were people trying to cross, and when they saw us, they would go back.
How would you specifically worry about the narcotic aspect? You never had to chase other airplanes or something like that.
Oh, no.
Something really exciting.
That was just part of it. It gave us a little more experience in the flying with the Civil Air Patrol. We used their planes. Also, we did search and rescue, but this was more of a law enforcement thing.
Right.
And we also searched boats, too, along the coast. We went out and flew over the ocean and looked at these shrimp fishing boats and tried to get the numbers off of some of them and who was out there because,
that
you don't know,
like
there might be
fun
transporting either drugs or people.
Yeah, I remember I was about 15, 16, 17 in the air cadets in England. And one of the camps we went to was a Royal Naval Air Station, and they had these big Hercules airplanes with big doors they'd open, and they'd strap you in so you could hang out. And we were taking photographs of the Russian fishing fleet, none of which I think ever caught fish. I mean, they were simply there to intercept communications. And I thought that was a career for me. Did you ever think of changing careers again and just flying as a career?
Well, that would have been quite a change. One time, a pilot for United Airlines flew with me on a plane and asked me, "Do you want to be a pilot for United Airlines?" This was like 1981. I had not even taken a flying course at all.
Oh, and so you weren't flying
I
with
him. I wrote
it
off right away. I said, well, I have a career already, you know. But I missed that opportunity. I might have should have told him, well, I'll look into it. You don't want to just write off any opportunity right
away. Well,
yeah,
that's the story of your life, and that's the story that the listener's going to come up with.
Always at least spend a few days considering something.
But you were saying that your mother was encouraging you to do art, and as I sit here in front of you, you look very delightful, the way that you're dressed with your nice necklace, the blue shirt, the orange polka dot. Well, not polka dot, but you look very artistic, I must say. You know, you look like what an artist is supposed to look like, and yet here you are talking about science and flying and
rockets. I don't have the beret on for the artists.
That's outside of the car, right?
They often wear.
Ruth Barrett, it's been a tremendous pleasure talking to you. And thank you very much for being here on Science Studio.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much, too, Keith.
And we would like to thank Norma Martinez for putting this program together. And we hope you'll be back next week for another Science Studio. Take care. Bye-bye.